Nobody went there at night. I had always walked west to MacDougall Street and beyond. Everything was hip. This evening I walked east. In the Greenwich Village, there were two sections, east and west. East Village, where Srila Prabhupada was a very poverty-stricken area, very run down. West Village was the birthplace of the youth movement of the 1960s, called West Village. That is where people like Bob Dylan and other singers began their careers. So just to understand the stark difference, Prabhupada didn't go to that place where everyone thought was cool. He went to the east side, completely different, totally run down, very humble. But on that east side, there were very serious seekers. And west side were those who were more superficial. So the streets were empty except for a few winos. Winos means those who are addicted to wine. Winos weren't threats in the day before hard drugs. They were often talented, educated, even friendly. Some were great poets. Some were former university professors or even politicians. I passed one sitting in a doorway. "Kind sir," he said gently, "I seem to be short-funded. A loan of 17 cents is all I need for some wine." "I don't have 17 cents, said Achyutananda. I walked on past him. He shouted after me, "Why do you look back in disdain?" Was he a guru in disguise? I better see what this Swami's like first. I arrived at 26 Second Avenue. It had been a small store. From within, I heard brass cymbals clanging in a 1-2-3 beat. Above the front window, a sign read, "Matchless Gifts." The former business sold candles, incense, and, obviously, matches. It was all gutted and cleared out now. In the window were three brick-colored, hard-bound books and a typewritten note. Srimad Bhagavatam translated from the original Sanskrit with elaborate commentary by A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. I was intrigued that the word Vedanta was in his title. A young couple standing next to me were also looking in the window. We could hear the muffled sound of hand cymbals and drums playing a 1-2-3 beat. I joined my palms together and asked them, "Is this 26 Second Avenue?" Laughing, they said, "Pilgrim, your search has ended." I went into the store. Sitting on the floor were about 25 men and women playing cymbals and chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. I sat in my most perfect lotus position and joined in the chanting. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. At the far end, seated on the floor on a straw mat, playing hand cymbals and chanting Hare Krishna, was A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. His head was shaved, and the simple saffron robes he wore were not hemmed but torn at the edges. His eyes were closed in concentration, and he looked like he could be the prime minister of the galaxy. The chanting lasted for another 10 minutes. And the Swami solemnly recited some Sanskrit prayers and began his talk. "Thank you, boys and girls, for coming. It is very nice that you have come here to hear the chanting of this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. God is not different from His name, form, qualities, and pastimes." This is the actual transcript. "This Maha Mantra is not different from Krishna Himself. We are all wandering in this material world, taking birth in 8,400,000 species of life, sometimes animal or human or demigod. We have taken bodies of various kinds. This human form of life is the best opportunity for God realization. Now we can understand we are not this American body, but pure spirit soul. We must give up all identification with the body and all the designations that accompany it. I am American, I am Indian, I am white race, black race. The great sage Narad Muni says, Sarvopadi Vinira Muktam. Mukti is liberation from all these bodily designations. You are thinking I am American, Indian, or Japanese. I am white or black, young and old. These are all bodily conceptions of life. It is temporary illusion. I have seen at your United Nations building, and there are so many flags. When there will be one flag, then you can say the world is united. The chanting of Hare Krishna cleanses the mirror of the mind. So long as our consciousness is dirty, no plans for world peace or any peace is possible. After his talk, he cut up an orange and a bearded disciple who looked like Jesus in jeans passed the pieces around on a plate. That was Hayagriva. The Swami, at this time the title of Prabhupada had not been adopted, left through a side door. I went home. I must meet the Swami in private was my only idea. I'll tell him about my yoga experiences. It must be difficult for a 70-year-old man living alone in New York. Maybe I could help him. A few days later, I moved out of my mother's home into a typical one-bedroom apartment on Avenue A and 18th Street. This is about 15 blocks from the temple. It wasn't so bad. It had rats and roaches. The bathtub was in the kitchen. I went to the temple every week. After chanting, the Swami explained how the chanting of Hare Krishna is as natural as a young baby crying for the love of its mother. The kirtan started again. We went beyond the meditative mood that we had previously intoned so as to sound like the monotonic basso profundo of the Tibetan monks or Gregorian chants. This time we wailed, hands in the air. People outside the window peeked into the room, mouths open, thinking that something happened, and something good, or somebody did something great, and somebody had. And then the Swami stood up, raised his arms, and swayed along with us. I said to Hayagriva, the professor who was chanting and swaying next to me, are we going to sit with the Swami and meditate? He said, never trust a holy man who can't dance. Time did not matter. Nothing else mattered except Hare Krishna chanting. Our hearts were melting into the mantra, and we were raising the roof. When the chanting ended, the Swami took out a plate of sweets. Look what I have made. And passed out the sweets. Professor Howard said, never trust a holy man who can't cook either. Afterwards, I asked Jesus, can I go up and speak to the Swami? Yeah, sure. Two or three other men came with me. Behind this door was a little garden. Past that was the residential building to the Swami's apartment. Between the front building and the back apartment building is a garden in the middle. This is a common setup in old tenements in New York. On the left was a room with a parquet floor that had his altar. On a small table was a brass incense holder. Beside it, a small handbell. A picture of Krishna and a picture of five unusual-looking personalities were the centerpiece. Indian illustrators disregard anatomy when painting divine beings. This was a picture of Lord Chaitanya and his associates. Their arms were raised in praise, and they had deep stares in their eyes. I knew that I would have a lot of questions. I sat with a few others in the adjoining room where the Swami held court. He sat on the floor on a folded blanket behind a metal box that served as both a low desk and a metal box. This was a trunk from India that carried Srila Prabhupada's books, one of three. Next to him on the floor was his typewriter. and in each corner were dozens of the brick-colored books. I didn't hear what a lady asked, but the Swami was saying, "This is a lack of knowledge." Then he handed her a version of the Gita. Until his own translation of Bhagavad Gita came out, he used the version by Dr. Radhakrishnan. He said the commentary was imperfect, but the verse translations were all right. Whenever anyone asked a question, the Swami would hand them the book and tell them to go to this or that chapter and verse and read. This demonstrated that his answers were based on the Gita and not on his own idea or speculation. He was passing down the explanation from Krishna directly. His example of this was so perfect. At night, can you find the sun? Even with a 100-power flashlight, you cannot see the sun. And when the sun is in the sky, what is the use of your flashlight? Then it was my turn. Can you teach Raja Yoga? Raja Yoga includes the Hatha Yoga system, the Ashtanga Yoga system, leading to Samadhi, the perfect trance, which I thought I had already attained, but needed a guide. He passed me the Bhagavad Gita. The Swami said, go to the 9th chapter. Read from verse, Bhagavad Gita 9:2. Raja Vidya Raja Guyam. He explained, Raja Yoga can mean the king of yoga or the yoga of kings. In Vedic times, kings were yogis, not like your elected politicians. He laughed. They all laughed. Now go to 6th chapter, last verse. Yoginam api sarvesham. And of all yogis, he who always abides in me with great faith, worshipping me in transcendental loving service, is most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. Then Raymond started to ask. Raymond is Roy Ram, another early devotee, Raymond Moraes. He became the Back to Godhead first editor. The Swami cut him off sharply. This is not your religion, because Raymond had started to ask, in your religion, Prabhupada cut him off. This is not religion. This is knowledge. Raymond reframed his question. Is everything God or made out of God? The pantheists say God doesn't create the world. He becomes the world. That is all right, said the Swami. But he remains full in the balance. Ishopanishad says, Purnam eva vishishyate. God is complete. If you add, multiply, divide infinity, you get infinity. And if you subtract infinity from infinity, the remainder is infinity. Raymond asked, what is absolute truth? The Swami answered, without moving a muscle, that which is, evam tatvavidas tatvam, the really real thing. It is repetitious for emphasis. Someone said, don't we all become one with God? The Swami said, nothing is separate from God. That's all right. But you are not God. But aren't we all the same? The Swami cut in. The impersonalists have this example. God is like the all-pervasive air. If you have a pot, the air takes the shape of the pot. Break the pot, and the air in the pot merges with the all-pervasive air. This is called big air and little air. It is a very cunning argument. You agree? Everyone agreed. Having heard that version before, because there are many Mayavadis in New York. But then he retorted, yes, but an analogy has to have some similarity with the thing being described. The analogy that has the most similarities is the best. First of all, the spirit, soul, and God are nothing like air. It is described in the Upanishads as like a spark of sunshine and the sun. Sunshine is all pervasive, but can a spark of sunshine become the sun? We were silent. Just answer. Can a spark of sun become the whole sun planet? No, everybody said all together. He continued. Again, back to the example of air in the pot. If everything is only formless, void, then who made the pot? Where does this nonsense pot come from? It is simply jugglery of words. Someone said, it's God's dream. The Swami said, that is another nonsense. Just try to understand. A formless, impersonal void cannot dream of pots. We had no response. We agreed. That's called teaching. I came one afternoon and got to speak to the Swami alone. He was typing furiously with two fingers. We forget that in those days, before everything we know about technology, Srila Prabhupada was typing manuscript with two fingers. How much endeavor, with no assistance. So much dedication and determination. We cry sometimes when we don't get Wi-Fi signal or something is wrong, internet interruption. So much distress. Oh, so much crying, gnashing of teeth, wringing of hands. And Prabhupada is typing with two fingers on a typewriter. Yes, come on, he said. I asked. There are two verses in the Gita that I don't understand. But no contain the answer to something. Stumbling on the words, I asked if he knew their meaning. I paraphrased, all beings are in me, but I am not in them. Yet everything does not rest in me. Behold my mystic potency. It's fabulous but inconceivable. How is Krishna in everything and not? The Swami cut in. He handed me the book and said, just read from chapter 9, verses 4 and 5. By me all these worlds are pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. And yet all that is created does not rest in me. Behold my mystic opulence. Yes, those are the two, I said. But how can Krishna be everywhere? How can God have a form and also be everywhere? I asked. Just like the sun, it spreads its light and heat. The light and heat cannot be separate from the sun. But, then I said, but isn't Krishna in me? Yes, he replied confidently. Just like if you have many pots of water, you can see the sun disk in each one. But the sun planet is far away in the sky. You understand? Yes, but I'm not sure I'm following all that. Achyutananda was only 16. He was the youngest at that time, remember. But he was asking very serious questions, so Prabhupada was very attentive. He got a lot of association with Prabhupada, more so than many, because of this simplicity, young man. I went on pressing my question. Then Krishna says, he is not in everything. Srila Prabhupada continued, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, I first taught this science to Vivasvan. That is the name of the sun god. So the sun represents Krishna in so many ways. The tree is product of sunlight, yes? By photo, how do you say? Photosynthesis, I helped. Yes, thank you. A tree is nothing but transformation of sunlight stored in the wood. Still, he went on, there is no tree in the sun. It would burn up, yes? Yes. But sitting under the tree, can you get sunburn? Just answer. No, I answered. Very good. Under the tree is shade. When you touch a tree, it is not hot. Sunlight evaporates ocean water to make the cloud to feed the tree water. But there is no water or cloud in the sun. No sun, no sunlight, no cloud, no tree. Like this, God can exist in his own abode and simultaneously be all-pervasive controller of the universe. Now I understand, Achyutananda said. The Swami said, thank you very much. I paid my respects and left. He went back to his typewriter. As I was leaving, he said, I appreciate this question. Again, he said, after a pause, if you have a magnifying glass, you can make fire from the sun, but only if the glass is clean. chanting this Hare Krishna mantra cleanses the heart. Out in the street, I thought to myself, do you know what just happened in there? Do you know what he just did? He explained the most cosmic, theological, universal, timeless, eternal questions ever asked. And like it was matter of fact. And then he thanks me for asking. We got to tell this to people. This is a Chaitanya's revelation. Everyone gets that revelation at some point. And sitting in front of Srila Prabhupada, many early disciples got this moment. So this epiphany, this moment of realization, this is the love of Matsya Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Siddhi Hoy. This is that one instance where you get the full consciousness, just a moment. It doesn't last because we're not pure. But in Prabhupada's presence, it was illuminated like this to give us a glimpse and to give us that understanding that yes, this is the absolute truth. You can continue. So like this, you can see from his life now, everything changes. He makes the commitment. On the order of his spiritual master, the Swami came to the USA on a steamship from Calcutta at age 70. Prabhupada told me at one time he had to share a room with a hippie couple. This is after coming to America. He had been staying early on in the ashram of Dr. Mishra. One temporarily. And then he got one place on Broadway, a few blocks away, 72 Broadway. It was an office, not a residence. There was no shower. Prabhupada would go to Dr. Mishra's to take shower. How much inconvenience is this? Living and sleeping in office. Small room. Nothing there. Then, he was not, you can say, getting any response. No one was coming forward. Again, this was this upper west side. West side of Manhattan is always associated with upper class. Like you must have in Bombay. Like Juhu or some other place. Must be poor section, rich section. So nobody from rich section was taking this message seriously. They were what we used to call weekend hippies. They live in a very comfortable place, but on the weekend they would come and listen to some Swami or Yogi, and then afterwards they would go back to their home in some comfortable place like Juhu and work. So nothing serious. So then someone said that everything that whole change is taking place is down in the east, the village. They called the village. So someone offered to share a loft. This person was a casual attendee at the meetings of Dr. Mishra. Not a very elevated person. Not someone you would call, not even vegetarians. But they offered Prabhupada a place, and so he took the opportunity to go there. I just needed to say that before we dive into this. So one time he had to share a room with a hippie couple. This is in that loft in the Bowery. This street, Bowery, is also very degraded. All these winos are living there. Bowery is synonymous in literature with the last place you fall down to for material life. This is also called Skid Row. So when you're completely finished, all material, and who knows, maybe that's why Srila Prabhupada thought this place is okay. You have nothing. That's where you end up. So this, I had to keep my food next to their meat in the refrigerator. They were not clean. This is Srila Prabhupada speaking. I slept in the bed next to theirs. And he told me, and sometimes they were not sleeping. In his diary, Prabhupada kept entries of his daily expenditures. One reads, went to Brentano Bookstore, a famous bookstore in New York, and returned to 72nd Street apartment. This is uptown. Brentano is downtown. Bus fare, 15 cents. This was in the middle of January, which means that he walked one way in the snow. New York is very cold. And then he took bus back just to save money. 15 cents. You can't imagine how frugal Srila Prabhupada was with Krishna's Lakshmi. He tore used envelopes inside out for his notepapers. In the 18th century, a great grandsire of the Krishna movement, Vishwanath Chakravarti, wrote, "Difficulties in preaching are 1,000 times more powerful than performance of austerities. Pious fasting and severe penances are planned. But ask any boxer." Everyone knows what boxer is? Fighter? Says, "The punch that hurts the most is the one you don't see coming. I defy any yogi or sage from the glorious ancient times to perform an austerity as difficult as living with two intoxicated hippies in New York in the winter of 1966 in the Bowery." One interesting note. In Giriraj Maharaj's memoirs, there's many moons. At that time, Achyutananda, everyone was also in Calcutta to open the temple, Albert Road. And Giriraj Maharaj relates that the temple president at that time was doing business for Krishna, but doing business. So he was preoccupied. Devotees were feeling somewhat neglected. They were complaining, "We're not getting proper food, we're not getting proper facility, we're not getting proper water." Many devotees in those days are Westerners. So, they're complaining to Srila Prabhupada because he is the all in all, he is the GVC, he is everything, Father. So Prabhupada called a meeting and said, "All right. Now you will all form a committee and you will meet once a week. And whatever you decide, you will write down in a book. And everyone will sign and everyone will follow." But then his mood changed. The problem was solved. He attended to it, solved. Then he said, "I do not even want to tell you how I struggled, because hardly anyone could understand." Said, "You don't want to know." In other words, you're complaining to me about some little inconvenience. Not getting some proper food or some fruit or some water like this. This is not life and death situation. Prabhupada suffered two heart attacks living in such conditions to establish this movement. So he wanted to give them in context what is real suffering. But he doesn't want to make it too heavy, like a gentle father. So he said, "My formula for success was everything for Krishna and nothing for me." So in that way, indirectly, he's telling them, this is just an inconvenience. Everything should be for Krishna. Nothing should be for me. Then you will not suffer. On another evening after the kirtan, a few of us went up to see the Swami. "Yes, come on," he said. Someone asked, "But isn't everything, even matter, is God?" He said, "That is a poor fund of knowledge. Matter is matter. Spirit is spirit. Matter is God because it is God's energy. Electricity is hot by nature, but it can run the refrigerator. The effect is cold. Just like we have a body, consciousness is spread all over the body. However, we have hair and nails that are not alive. You can cut them. There is no pain. There is no feeling. But if you see some fingernail on the ground, you know it came from somebody's hand. In the spiritual sky, there is only consciousness in ecstasy for eternity. In this world, everything is different from each other. If you say, water, water, it is not water. In Vaikuntha, everything, even inanimate things, are Krishna's conscious servants. Krishna's conscious servants. Sentient. For example, he does not have to ask for a chair. When he wants to sit down, his chair comes. When we chant Krishna, he is there. The sunlight is filling this room, yes? Yes. No sun, no sunlight. No sun, no sunlight. Sun is concentrated fire. Similarly, Krishna is concentrated spirit, not a material form. It is 10% spiritual element. By the chanting of this Hare Krishna mantra, we can awaken ourselves and turn back to the face of the Lord and come back to Godhead. Come home back to Godhead. Then why does it say we are all God? The Swami responded, Upanishad says, he has hands and feet everywhere. Look at your hand. Everything belongs to God, yes? Yes. Then your hand also belongs to God. So you can say that this is God's hand, yes. Yeah. But your hand is not all-powerful like Krishna's. Still another understanding. If the hand is amputated, it cannot function. When the hand is attached, it functions. But you don't say, I hand. You say, my hand. When it functions to serve your sense enjoyment, it is amputated from God. But when used in Krishna's purpose, it is acting for Krishna. Then it is one of his hands. Now your hand is Krishna's hands. Krishna has unlimited hands, and he likes to use all his hands for himself, for his own enjoyment, just like you like to use yours for your enjoyment. So why not use it for Krishna? Similarly, all this is Krishna's energy, but it does not act like spirit. But putting an iron rod into the fire, it becomes hot. When it becomes red hot, then it acts like fire. I asked, where did you live in India? Vrindavan. What is it like? Oh, you can become more Krishna conscious in one day in Vrindavan than 10 years in America. It was after 11 o'clock at night, and yet this 70-year-old holy man said, you are all tired. I will stop. No, go on, go on. Any more questions? I will go on all night. A young lady said, how can God allow all this suffering and war? This is during the time of the Vietnam War. The Swami said, at night, when the sun is set, the thieves do their business. Is it the fault of the sun? And when the sun rises, all the thieves curse the sun and run away. I see, she said. Any more questions? He still showed no signs of drowsiness. But we did bow down and leave. Not that we were tired either, but that was a lot to absorb. We said, you're really helping us understand. Swamiji said, by associating with you, it is enriching my Krishna consciousness. We thanked him very genuinely for that blessing. And then the roof caved in. This is a Chutananda saying. Literally. I went home and read my Theosophical Society version of the Bhagavad Gita, which is the same one I first read. As I was reading, a few chips of plaster fell on the pages. I looked up and saw three huge cracks moving into the center of the ceiling. 3 2-inch chunks of concrete were sagging and ready to fall. I got out of the room to look for somebody like a superintendent, but there was none. As soon as I got to the ground floor, I heard a loud sound as if a shotgun went off. I went back upstairs and saw a cloud of dust. The pieces of cement, about a meter wide each, completely smashed everything in my room. I went back to 26 Second Avenue. Prabhupada was there. It was early evening, about 7 o'clock. I told him what happened. He said, Krishna saved you. I said, can I sleep here tonight? Yes, just go downstairs. The boys will help you. The boys were Bruce, later Brahmananda, a huge man in his mid-20s. Prabhupada called him the mountain of our mission. He wore work pants, a t-shirt, and red suspenders. We'll put some blankets down here and there. We do have rats. Bruce's brother Gregory, later Gargamuni, lived in the store as well. Brahmananda met Prabhupada a few months before and called his brother in Arizona with these words, "I've found it." "What?" "The real thing." "Come to New York." See, everyone was looking. And when you found Prabhupada, everyone knew. Because there were many bogus gurus at that time in Greenwich Village. So many. There's Swami Satchidananda. And there's... Who else? Swami said this transcendental meditation. Who else? Maheshwaras, yes, yogi. And also this Guru Maharaji, young boy. He was there also. So many people were trying what it is. But anyone who is serious, they came, they found Prabhupada, and they stayed. Prabhupada told us the story of a cruel hunter who did not kill the animals. He shot them but left them flapping. We were amused by the Swami's words, flapping. The story goes on to tell how Narad the great sage said, "Don't leave them flapping. At least kill them quickly." By the association of the sage, the hunter gave up all killing, not even to step on an ant, and he became a devotee of Krishna. That night we slept in the store. We heard the skittering of the rats. Brahmananda tossed around, bolted up and turned on a light. No rats. It was Gargamuni tickling him. "You were flapping." The Swami said we could shower in his bathroom. The four of us, including the Swami, shared one large blue towel. What mercy. Where is that towel now? Brahmananda was an elementary school teacher and told me, "One day I told all the kids to move the chairs back and sit on the floor, cross-legged Indian style. They thought I meant American Indians. Kids who couldn't read were reading." He told me that the Swami can initiate us. This shows our seriousness in learning and practicing. "What's involved?" I asked. "Well, it would be better if you shaved up." I hadn't had a haircut in over a year. I said, "Buzz me." After a day or two, the shock of having a baldy passed. The sika, or tuft of hair, means that one is a student and a servant of the spiritual master and God, and a servant of the spiritual master and God, and distinguishes us from impersonalists and Buddhists who are completely shaved. It was a lot easier to dry off after a shower, too. And nothing to comb, either. Brahmananda said, "Ah, now I can see your face." Because Vachutananda's hair used to cover his face. Then he explained what initiation involved. The Swami's four rules and regulations were: no gambling, no illicit sex, no meeting, and no intoxication. I can do all those. But what was that second thing? It means to either remain celibate or be married. Some days later, the Swami told this story. There was once a rich landlord. While inspecting his land, he saw a beautiful woman living on one of his properties. He came by and said, "You should not be laboring in my fields. I am going to move you to my house and you will do various services." She said, "Come back in 3 days and I will come with you." She took a very strong purgative and threw up and passed liquid stool for 3 days. She kept stool and vomit in three buckets. On the third day, the landholder came back and she was in rags, all discolored and thin. "Where's the beautiful girl I'm here to take?" "I am that girl." "Where is your beauty? 3 days ago you were beautiful." "There, I have kept it in the three buckets. Take them with you." This story is called Liquid Beauty. Deep within, I said to myself, this is a real guru. The fashion gurus that came through New York would never tell a story like that. This is old school. I envisioned young sages sitting at their master's feet from time immemorial, hearing this story. This is old, very old time religion. We asked Srila Prabhupada about his japa mala. He said, yes, these are beads to chant Hare Krishna. Japa is chanting in the mouth. When you are initiated, you can also have. So before this, no one was chanting. They were staying there, living there, and no one was chanting. Actually, Prabhupada didn't. He was watching very closely. Even some were smoking beedis, but they would go outside the store. Prabhupada didn't say at this time. He hadn't yet told them. He had only told them these things. We all bought wooden beads from a craft store and strung them ourselves. There must between them, the japa mala represents the 108 gopis who are the individual divine energies of Krishna. One bead marks where you finish one round and then go back. Chant 16 rounds each day, that will be nice. We asked Prabhupada, where do you get those bags? He opened his chest and took out a piece of elliptically shaped cardboard. It was the sewing pattern for the bead bag. Here, you make four sides from this. Along with boxes of books, the cooker, and other luggage from India, he also packed that pattern to teach Americans how to chant Hare Krishna. The bag is used because the 108 beads are very long and they should not touch the floor or get entangled on anything. We prepared for initiation. The initiation ceremony was held in the apartment's deity room. The Swami laid out the materials and paraphernalia for a sacrifice. He had prepared a square foot of sand on top of his metal plate on the floor. Arranged on the sides were kindling wood, ghee, and rice grains. He made lines across the sand with colored powders, red, white, and blue. In a London initiation ceremony one time, a devotee made colored lines like the Union Jack. Prabhupada said, that is nice. He lit the wood and spooned the ghee on it. Each time chanting the prayers to the disciplic succession, he chanted one round of Hare Krishna mantras on each set of four beads. Later I asked him the meaning of my name. Achyuta is a name for Krishna as infallible. Ananda is bliss. One who takes pleasure in the quality of Krishna's infallibility, he never falls down. Why he gave me that name, I'll never know. When Brahmananda was initiated, his mother attended. This was later. She looked like Lauren Bacall in a trench coat. She was not amused. I guess I shouldn't have taken you to all those Indian movies. What do I tell everybody now? My son, the Swami? After the fire sacrifice, Prabhupada told Brahmananda, now just go and bow down to your mother. It was hard, but we all remained serious when Brahmananda bowed down to Mrs. Sharf. The day after initiation, Keith, now Kirtanananda, came down to the store from the Swami's apartment. Come upstairs to the kitchen. The Swami is cooking. The Swami said, you must all learn to cook. Every Indian gentleman can cook. He had a brass container built in three parts, simple and brilliant in design and function. The bottom of the cooker was one brass pot. In here you put this dal, water, salt, and three potato. The second section fit on the top. It had about eight holes in the bottom, about half inch diameter, let steam rise through. Put that on top. In this section you put vegetables. We put in cauliflower and greens. The third section was also perforated. Up here you can put more vegetable. And then put this stainless steel container with rice and water, then put on full flame. Just let it cook. He taught us how to make the chunk. Roasted spices in a small iron cup. The Swami fried spices and ghee to make an essence of cumin, chilies, and hing. Not so much hing. When it was smoky, he pointed to a pair of pliers. Just give me that catcher. I handed him the pliers. He picked up the hot cup and dropped the smoking spices into the cup, into the dal. Poof. This did get us into some trouble with the landlord because of this smell, but it tasted very great. Everyone knows that we also lived in one residential facility. At that time, kitchen was in the basement. And 3-4-story building. But you always knew when they had chanced the dal. You know, because we would drink big dal and big chants. And you, from 3 floors, your eyes would water. The cook would make this chant so strong. And all neighbors would complain. So you can understand what this meant. Kirtananda and I cooked lunch daily in 4 big pots. We made brown rice for the health food folks and white rice for Prabhupada. He showed us how to make whole wheat chapatis or rotis. He tugged on my earlobe. Make the dough as firm as this. Prabhupada also used that example one time. When one newcomer said, "Can we learn everything from the books?" So then Prabhupada tugged on that person's ear and says, "Can book do this?" That's why you need guru. Guru can tug on your ear. Book cannot tell you when you're wrong. So this is Prabhupada's example. Book cannot do this. So we need guru. The loose flour messed up the stove. But lathered in ghee, rotis are so good, I asked. Why don't we eat onions and garlic? They're vegetables too. The Swami said, Krishna does not like. We are not so much vegetarians. We are Krishnatarians. A few days later, I cooked my full first lunch by myself. Prabhupada was typing when I came into his room and said, "It's ready." He looked over and said, "I will now offer prasadam." I made up the one only metal plate we had, and he placed it on his altar. Sitting on a mat, his left side towards the picture of the deities, he made slow circles with the incense holder in his right hand, and in his left hand he rang the bell. He chanted Sanskrit prayers in a deep, sacred voice. "How do we offer our food to Krishna?" the Swami said. "There are prayers and ritual forms, but most important is to offer with your love." It's getting late, 9 o'clock. Should we end? Brajahari is the boss. 5-10 minutes more. In every lecture, Prabhupada would cover every point in the entire philosophy every time. It was extraordinary. As we read the 3 volumes of his translation and commentaries of the Srimad Bhagavatam, again this phenomenon occurred. I can say that if you took off the covers of his books and shuffled the pages and took any 3 or 4 pages of commentary at random, you'd get a complete overview of every principle. In a time when everything cultural was a rehash of existing art, music, drama, in film, TV, comedy, originality was rare and a valued quality. The Swami was an original. He wasn't imitating anyone. That was the phenomena of chanting only these 3 names, the Hare, Krishna, and Rama. It never grew stale. It is Krishna's inconceivable quality, and although he is the oldest, he is ever new. We all went down to the store, temple, and were joined by several others. We discussed everything we had each heard from the Swami. Later, Prabhupada asked, where were you all? We were downstairs discussing. Prabhupada said, "Yes, this is called Ishta Gosti. All sit together and talk about Krishna. This is nice." One day, Prabhupada told Brahmananda, "Now that we are having regular classes and serving food, we must have one signboard. A signboard with letters and numbers so we can announce the days and times of the classes." Brahmananda went out to the store and came back an hour later. Without a signboard. "Swamiji, signboards are $55. We don't even have money for the rent." Prabhupada commanded, "Get one signboard." Brahmananda came back with a signboard, the kind with black felt, with movable plastic letters and numbers, and put it in the window. It had the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and the times of the morning and evening classes, followed by prasadam. That evening, 75 people came. I passed the basket around. It was full of money. It may have been a storefront, a garden, and an apartment on the Lower East Side, but to us, it might as well have been a 15th century monastery. The only lady devotee that came regularly was Judy, later Jadurani. She was an illustrator. Her painting at first was simple drawing, but as she heard the Swami's description of Krishna's truths and the potencies, she became a fine artist. She had also studied folk music, and one day came with Reverend Gary Davis, the blind pastor and gospel singer. We all sat together with Prabhupada in an old time. Baritone Southern Baptist preacher voice. The Reverend said, "What is it that we should ask from God?" Prabhupada answered, "We should ask for His love." And there was peaceful silence. When Jadurani was working on a large picture of Vishnu, she took a break to ask the Swami a question. She stood at Prabhupada's door. "Come on," he said. Jadurani asked Prabhupada, "You have said that Paramatma, the super soul who lives within the heart, is seated in our hearts. So is he in a seated position, sitting position, or a standing position?" Prabhupada said, "Oh, that takes many thousands of births of meditation to realize." Jadurani hung her head and got up to leave, a little disappointed. And then Prabhupada said, "He is standing." She left very happy not to have to wait so long. I asked the Swami, "Do we need to study the Vedanta Sutras?" He answered, "The natural explanation of the sutras is the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the description of the relationship of the devotees with Krishna. During the time of our previous Acharya Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, there was a challenge by the Brahmins that the disciples of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had no commentary on Vedanta. You cannot be accepted as bona fide without one. Vishwanath was advanced in age, so his disciple Baladev Vijayabhushan composed of a Govinda Bhashya. Sometimes I will teach you this commentary." Then he smiled mischievously. "They are filled of intricacies." Then he explained in more detail. Krishna says, "I am the author and the knower of the Vedas and the goal of the Vedas. The impersonalists use all manner of jugglery of words to give their interpretation of the sutras. For example, any word can have many meanings, just like in your thesaurus. If you put an obscure meaning of a word back into a sentence, you can make anything sound like nonsense. Just understand, Veda means knowledge and Ananta means the conclusion. So Vedanta is the conclusion of knowledge. Or you can say Ve means without and Danta means teeth. So Vedanta can mean a toothless old man. This is called Yadva Yadva. That means this or that or this. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained how every word means Krishna." So it's getting late. Any simple questions we can answer and then go take a Kadashi Prasadam? No? Jai, all glories. Oh, one, Kuldeep. One question. Last question. Yes, Kuldeep. I think that will take some time. And now it's a little late. But I will come back. Kuldeep asked, "When did I have my moment of realization?" So we can speak another time on this.
Hare Krishna. I would humbly like to request you to speak something from your heart about Srila Prabhupada.
Ah, so many things, but Brajahari will get angry that everyone is missing their service in prasadam. But one short story. Of course, one moment, simple moment, when I was visiting the temple, Srila Prabhupada was, of course, seated on the Vyasasan. We had built the Vyasasan only the night before. We had spent several days, but only finished it the night before. And that was the way, whenever Srila Prabhupada would come, some marathon, Prabhupada is coming, we had to clean the temple, we had to do so many things. But in the last minute, they wanted to change Prabhupada's Vyasasan. It was a smaller Vyasasan. They were thinking he needed something very nice. And that Vyasasan is still there in New York Temple. We had built it in New York, and it is still there. So we were up pretty much the whole night. So to listen to class, I had to stand up. So I was standing next to Prabhupada, just to his left side. And he was giving, of course, deities are in front, like Kira and Radha Govinda are very beautiful. He was giving lecture to all the devotees. And from second canto. And at one point, Prabhupada was explaining how, if you want to catch up something good, and first you have to put down the bad thing. So he showed with his hand, said, just like you have some dirty thing. So if you want to pick up a good thing, first you must put down the bad thing. So when he said this, he looked directly at me and made that you have to let go, because I had not fully surrendered yet. I had not shaved up. I was doing service in the temple. I was very attracted, but I had not moved in. I had not broken that attachment, my independence, my minute independence. I was still thinking whatever. We were thinking so many things. But when Srila Prabhupada looked at me like that, through me and in me, then I realized now my material life is finished, basically. But still, it wasn't until the next morning that, and of course not knowing, having only read some of the books, Bhagavad Gita, some of Nectar Devotion, but nothing in Bhagavatam at that time. The next morning I was sitting. That time I had slept, so I was sitting. And I didn't want to stand so close to Srila Prabhupada that he might again pick me out. Because when he did that the day before, I thought everyone, when he said this, everyone in the temple was looking. I thought, this is a little embarrassing. Everyone knows Prabhupada is talking about my dirty things. So I sat closer to the halfway to the deities. So Prabhupada might not see me so clearly. But as he was speaking, he was describing how the potency of the spiritual master, his specific qualification, how he can remove all doubt and illusion from the disciple. And as he was describing this, he was also speaking how Krishna is there and Maya is behind and to the side. She can never come in front. And as he was saying that, I had that same moment that Achyutananda had, where everything was crystal clear. Illusion was momentarily lifted. And I understood I've wasted my 23 years in the material world. Now this one moment, I must remember this for my whole life. Because it is clear that this is the pure devotee. He's speaking the absolute truth. And now that I know the absolute truth, I am obliged to follow it. So then from that point I moved in. I asked, the temple president was very kind to me. He used to let me stay. And even now then I was staying in the temple because Srila Prabhupada was there. But then I said to myself, can I stay? Can I move in? Because I wasn't moved in. I was just visiting. But overnight. I said, yes, you can stay. And so then from that point I stayed. So Prabhupada is very kind. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Hari Bol.